Rainmaker FM.
This podcast is brought to you by copyblogger.com. Words that work. Build your online authority with powerfully effective content marketing. Get superior content marketing education so you can build a remarkable online presence. Head over to copyblogger.com to learn more. That's copyblogger.com. Hey there, it is so good to see you again. Welcome back to Copyblogger FM, the content marketing podcast. Copyblogger FM is about emerging content marketing trends, interesting disasters, and enduring best practices, along with the occasional rant. My name is Sonia Simone. I'm a co-founder and the chief content officer for Copyblogger Media, and I share more writing, and I also have a complete archived podcast at remarkable-communication.com. So this is part two of my series on writing an epic blog post, and these points also apply to things like podcast scripts or video scripts, but to keep things simple, I'm just going to say blog post. This is part two in the series, and in part one, I talked about how to get ready to write this kind of content. And you don't want to skip that because the quality of your research and the questions that you answer and the thinking that you do have a lot to do with whether or not the end result could actually be called, you know, epic. So now that you've got a big pile of research and you've done some serious thinking, what do you do with it? How do you pull it together? I suspect today might be a little on the long side, but I will try and get through it efficiently. So the first principle, and this I think is really important for all kinds of content that you create, any piece of content, a blog post, a video script, a podcast, you want it to have one idea. So a lot of times I see people who are trying, they're setting out to write a big post, an epic post, an important post, and they think that means it needs to have a lot of ideas. But that is really a recipe for something that's not compelling and something that's not persuasive. Your post needs to have one big, important idea. And at the heart of that is the question, what one thing do you want to convince people to do differently? So do you want them to take up a new way of thinking? Do you want them to do a different behavior? Do you want them to vote differently or to buy something differently? So we talked about it last week because it's a really important part of that thinking aspect of planning for a big post. But if for some reason you don't have a handle on it yet, don't start writing until you do. Because that's just exactly how you end up with, you know, these big posts that you're sitting there for weeks and you can't make any progress. It's because you haven't made a decision about what you want people to do differently. So it's not uncommon that I'll get a guest post on Copyblogger, and people, you know, when they write for a big site like Copyblogger, they tend to want to write something big. They want to, you know, they want to swing for the fences, which is a good thing. I applaud that. But a lot of times I'll see a post that has a lot of ideas. It's just got a lot of things it's trying to say. And that takes a reader who's been nodding along and who's been engaged, and it suddenly just makes her say, you know, I have a lot to do. I'm going to finish this later. So everything in your post can be really good, but when you start pulling a million ideas into it, the attention just falls out of it for the reader. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have a lot of ideas, because you probably do. When you do a lot of research and you really dive deep on a topic, you tend to come up with a lot of ideas, a lot of things you want people to do differently, a lot of things that you want to talk about that you think are important. And those are little side ideas that grow up to be their own posts. So, you know, someday you might bring them all together into a book, for example, or a series, which is awesome. But every single post and every single episode, you want to have it have one idea, one thing you want people to do differently, and one hypothesis about, you know, how you think the world works, basically. So one big idea, one change you want to make in the world, is kind of the first point I want to make about the actual writing process. You're sitting down and you're writing. The first thing you do is you know the answer to that question. Another piece to this, you may write it second, you may write it after you do the middle, is a powerful first impression. I was talking to a very good, very accomplished copywriter about this, about writing a big post, a big piece of content, and she was maybe slightly surprised or thought it was interesting that I always start with a hook. And absolutely, I always have to get somebody interested in reading further. If you have a big piece of content, it's more important than ever to make sure that person is engaged enough to stick with you through this ride. And that happens when you make a really powerful first impression. Now, this is one place, just to confuse you, because we were just talking about one big idea. Sometimes this is a little tangential or a little to the side of your big idea because it's an on-ramp. And on-ramps, right, tend to be at an angle to the highway. So sometimes your powerful first impression, it's related, but it might not be instantly obvious that it's related. So, for example, you might tell a story that's an analogy for your big idea. It's not directly about the big idea. It's a metaphor or some other kind of analogy. Now, when I say powerful first impression and I talk about the introduction, that includes the first couple of paragraphs of the piece. It includes the headline. And it actually probably also includes the image that you use to illustrate the content, the top image and or the featured image that people will see when it's shared on social media. So those all add up to your one powerful first impression. I'll give you an example of using a story that's an analogy for the big idea. I used a well-known story that I found in a friend's book. I, of course, gave him credit in the post. It's a story called The African Violet Story. Now, the change I wanted to see with the post was to encourage people to step up to their big projects, to their big dreams, and make them happy. The African Violet Story is not about marketing or digital business, but the post was. So my story took a normal life story, a story about a regular person who did something extraordinary, and I used that as the on-ramp to the business point. So it was a little sideways, but then it merged into the main point. And I'll give you a link to that post in the show notes. I'm not saying it was a super genius piece of work, but it gives you an illustration of what I mean when I say that sometimes the introduction comes in a little sideways. The only rule to the introduction is that it has to get the rest of the piece read. So it has to be interesting and it has to be engaging. And you can break other rules to do that as long as, of course, you're not, you know, doing something that wouldn't be honest or ethical or, you know, you're not going to break any laws, right? Those are important rules to follow. But if you're breaking a copywriting rule, if you're breaking, again, that rule that your post has to be about one thing, that's okay if it is in service to getting the piece read. That is the introduction's job. That is the job of the first impression of your piece. Punto, period. End of sentence. Now, sometimes we see all over the web that somebody opens a piece or has like an introduction and an image and a headline that's about something super controversial or just super engaging. And then you click through and, you know, the relationship to the rest of the content is kind of thin. That's the formula for clickbait, right? Powerful promise made by the first impression, weak delivery. You don't want to do that because it's not going to serve your goals. That's not epic. So you want to be mindful of having your first impression, that headline, introduction, and image. You don't want to let those things write a check that your content can't cash. Now, sometimes it can be the case that the way to make this work is to take a step back on the headline and the intro to be maybe not, you know, less, not have a weak impact, but also not cross over into hype. So if you're in a topic that has a lot of hype, I am, right? I talk about online digital marketing. There's a lot of hype in my space. We have often found it's effective to just click that dial one notch back in the headline, not a weak headline, but a headline that's not super, you know, bim, bam, boom, wow, breakthrough, yeah, you know, pow. If you are in a hypey topic, sometimes people pay more attention to a whisper, if it's a well-crafted whisper, than they do to a shout. And that's something you just want to experiment with and see what, you know, what's working really well for you, your content, and your audience. In general, for this really important work of making a powerful first impression, I just think it's worthwhile to develop your bag of tricks. So that means, you know, you read posts on Copyblogger and listen to podcasts, and you read copywriting books, and you read other wonderful sites about marketing and content, and just get as many tricks as you can. You know, one person will tell you, always start with a story. And another person will tell you, always put a benefit in the headline. That is advice that I often give. Put something in the headline that lets the reader know what they're going to get out of clicking through and reading it. Another person will tell you to use curiosity, which sometimes can work really well. Sometimes it can backfire because it confuses people, but it is definitely worth experimenting with curiosity. I will give you one, in addition to putting a benefit in the headline, that I see work really just about every time, and that is to start with a problem that that audience has probably faced. You know, problems are inherently interesting. So that's why page-turning novels and why exciting films have a lot of conflict, and very commonly that conflict is there right on the first page. Usually the first few moments of the film, the first few paragraphs of the story. It's why It Was a Dark and Stormy Night is kind of tossed around as an example of a not good, you know, bad writing, a bad way to start a story, because there's no real conflict in that. It's why I just have experience of this just before I recorded this. You know, we've all seen that controversial thread on a social media platform, and it gets comments for hours or days or weeks or longer, you know, if the moderators don't close it down. Problems get attention. They are engaging. We like to solve problems. And problems is not necessarily, you know, negativity, but it's a thorny issue that our minds are spurred to try and solve and resolve. Another introduction that I use a fair amount is what I call the passionate statement of beneficial belief. So basically, I believe a certain thing. I believe it strongly. I have the evidence. I believe it because I really looked into it and I feel like the evidence supports it. And I introduce my post by making that statement in a strong way. I'll often start with a problem and then state, you know, here's how I believe we can solve this terrible problem. I said beneficial belief because it's important that whatever it is I'm saying I believe benefits the audience. So I don't post on Copyblogger about my beliefs on, you know, raising my son, or what kind of gardening is the best kind of gardening, or how many carbs people should eat. That is not what my audience is coming to Copyblogger for. But I will state really strongly my beliefs about creating sustainable business, ethical profitability, and creating work and business lives that are satisfying to us and support us as whole people. Those are things that matter to me and matter to my audience. And, you know, it's a bit boring when all of your content hooks readers in exactly the same way. It gets formulaic and it just isn't as fun. So I would really encourage you, keep adding to your bag of tricks. Keep your eyes open for different ways that your favorite content creators are making a great first impression. And try out the ones that resonate with you. Try them on for yourself. Adapt them to your voice and your topic. So I want to wrap up this powerful first impression by giving one caveat. And I only say this because I see it. I see people do it and it makes me wince. If people died, do not use that in your marketing unless what you sell is directly relevant to that. You know, so if you sell seatbelts, then maybe you would have content that would discuss, you know, car crashes. But even then, you know, you really want to think that through. And if you sell something that is not related to auto safety, I don't want car crashes anywhere near your marketing. They're compelling, but it's really profoundly, horribly disrespectful to use them. So I'm sure you're rolling your eyes and thinking, what kind of weirdo would do that? But I have seen it more times than I can tell you. I have seen people use war, terrorism, shootings, hurricanes, and other terrible things in their marketing. It's a terrible thing to do. Your audience will riot. Do not do this. You know, if you sell hurricane safety equipment, that's the kind of business that can use a hurricane in its marketing. Everybody else needs to shut up. There you have a passionate statement of beneficial belief. I have seen this just completely blow up on businesses, and somehow they don't understand why. So that's why I'm giving you this piece of advice. Okay, so that's the powerful first impression. It takes a lot of time because it's really important. You're going to put a lot of your time into making that strong first impression. Some people do this first. They want to know what that's going to look like before they go forward. Other people write the middle first and they save that powerful first impression for later. You know, it really depends on how you work. As long as it's powerful, put it together the way that works for you, and always experiment to see what works best for you as a creator. Now, I'm not going to talk about headlines in this episode because I have covered it. I've covered it in other podcasts, and we have a lot of really good resources for that on Copyblogger. If you just type in your search engine of choice, Copyblogger headlines, you're going to find really good resources, lots of free things. And of course, I'll also give you some links in the show notes. And you just get to those at any time by typing copyblogger.fm in your browser, and it'll whisk you right to the podcast. Okay, so that's your one idea. That's the first element. And your powerful first impression, that's your second element. The third is the meaty middle. This is the main part of what you're writing. This is where all that research that you did is going to go. So a typical, you know, good, high quality blog post will often have three main sections in the middle. And each of these sections will advance the main argument of the post. And that's a weekly kind of blog post or an epic post or anything in between. So if my one idea, my hypothesis is chocolate is the best kind of ice cream, then I'm going to have a section on statistics about popular ice cream flavors, noting that chocolate always, you know, comes quite high on the list. And then maybe I have another section that's a story, a personal story about how chocolate ice cream saved somebody's happiness and life. And then I've got a third section, and that's going to talk about the history, that people don't just love chocolate today, they've always loved chocolate. Now, obviously, I'm choosing this example just because it's silly and it's general, and it gives you the main idea of what I'm talking about when I say three sections. Just going to have three kind of supporting ideas for your main idea. Now, if we're talking about an epic post, there may be some different frameworks that you can go with. You could definitely still use that three main subsections, three main sub-ideas, all of which braid together to support your main idea. The difference would be that those sections would have more evidence. So instead of one story about how chocolate ice cream saved somebody's life, you might have three. Or you might have, instead of citing just Haagen-Dazs's, you know, statistics about ice cream flavors, you would include Ben and Jerry's, and you would include the Italian Gelato Makers Association, and, you know, you'd include a lot more pieces of evidence to support that thesis. So epic blog posts and regular blog posts make the same number of main arguments, one. But the difference is that an epic post is supported by a lot more evidence, and it may have a more complexly structured supporting argument. The hypothesis of every post is something like, people should do this thing in a new way, and here's why. And then your meaty middle is the why, the evidence. Now I'm going to touch briefly on a couple of other ways that you could structure your meaty middle. It could basically just be one section. It could be an analysis of a single piece of content. If you did a big piece of original research, then it could just be the findings from that research in detail. So that could be, you know, three sections, five sections, eight sections, or it could be one big section with lots of examples. You want to try to let the research that you did tell you how it wants to be presented. And you want to be open to the possibility that you might take those side points, those tangents, and create another piece of content out of them and leave them out of this, even if you love them very much. So 3 points is not a hard and fast rule for any kind of content. It's just a common one that you see because it tends to be readable. You can also make it a list post. If you have a lot more than 3 points, you might make it a numbered list. So list posts are tried and true online because people like them. People like to read them. So you want to make sure it's readable and not just clickable. But otherwise, if it lends itself to, you know, 27 reasons you should always do the thing, that can be very compelling. Another good structure for an epic post is the ultimate guide. And, you know, lots of content creators have talked about this one. An ultimate guide starts with the thing that you want people to be able to do. The ultimate guide to writing email subject headers, maybe. And then the structure of that just depends completely on how many steps are there and what do those steps look like. Again, if you want it to be an epic post, you're going to provide evidence. That evidence might be something people click through to so they don't have to wade through. Don't make people wade through, but have the evidence there. You know, Marketing Profs survey in 2018 showed clearly that this kind of email subject line is a good thing to pursue, that kind of thing. Another type of ultimate guide is a resource guide where you pull together all the things people are going to need to do something. The ultimate guide to building a campfire in the woods. You know, then you're going to have all the things that you want to make sure are always with you in your hiking backpack so that if you needed to build a campfire, you would be able to do that. Most important thing about the meaty middle is to make it meaty. So you're going to include lots of evidence. It's going to be credible evidence. Okay, we're not going to be linking to crazy, you know, National Enquirer, silly, crazy news sources. We're going to be clicking to real evidence without spinning off into more ideas. Everything relates back to the one idea. Now, sometimes the structure of research just doesn't fit neatly into any kind of the available templates. And in that case, you look at the data and you let it tell you how to best present it to support your one idea. And the last point about the meaty middle is you want to link out generously from that. So if you're citing evidence that can be linked to, link to it. If you've done, let's say, an original interview with an author who's an expert on the topic, then you would link to that person's website or that person's, you know, page for their book or something like that. Try to link in a way that benefits them if you can, rather than just a Wikipedia article. All right, coming in on the conclusion with the stirring conclusion. So if it's going to be epic, it has to finish strongly. First impressions and final impressions are the ones that people take away. Final impressions being the strongest. There's a reason restaurants put so much effort into dessert. If you eat a good meal at a restaurant and it has an incredible dessert, you will probably like that restaurant. Or it has an incredible cheese and port, you know, that you would have at the end of the meal. You'll probably want to go back there. The final impression is the one that tends to stick with us. So you and I have both heard many times the advice, tell them what you're going to say. Say what you're going to say, then tell them what you just said. And I think that's kind of weak. You know, it's not wrong exactly. There are definitely ways you can do that. But all by itself, that's quite boring. And boring is bad. So your introduction is the on-ramp. The introduction is where you're going to get them involved in the hypothesis. You might state it. You might wait to state it a little bit. Your meaty middle is your evidence for your hypothesis. Your stirring conclusion is a passionate personal call to action about doing this thing differently. So sometimes your stirring conclusion does restate what you've already said. Sometimes it does say, we've seen that chocolate ice cream has historically been one of the most popular flavors. We've seen that ice cream makers around the world, you know, consistently rank it in their top most popular flavors. And, you know, now it's time for you to join the movement and go get some chocolate ice cream for yourself. So sometimes we restate it. You're going to have to decide for yourself, does that make it stronger or is that just a boring recap? Boring recap, let's not do that. The most important thing about your stirring conclusion is that you started writing this piece with a change you wanted to make in the world with this piece of content, and your stirring conclusion is going to call with all the passion you have, is going to call on the world to make that change. So I would never, ever do all the work of making an epic post without having some kind of call to action at the end that led people to what I want them to do. And it could be to sign up for your consulting business. It could be to take your free course. It could be to get registered to vote or to go to the grocery store and buy some vegetables or to hug your kids. But again, you had a change you wanted to see. This is where you make the call for that change, and you make it clear and you make it strong. And if there's a link that makes it easier, you put the link in there. This is not where we're shy. This is where we're bold. And I hope you can see why I keep harping on that point of having that one idea you want to make, because everything hangs on it. You know, your introduction leads to it, your meaty middle is built around it, and your stirring conclusion goes right directly to it. So if it's weak, if you don't really know what you want people to do differently with this piece of content, the post is not going to be engaging and it's not going to do anything. So, and it's going to be a bear to write. It is a bear to try to write material when you don't know what you really, really want to say. All right, as anticipated, this ended up long. I do have some more pieces. I was going to wrap the series up by talking about how to promote this wonderful piece of content that you've created, but you really don't want to do that until you've gone through the final step, which is the perfectionistic polish. So I'm going to talk about the perfectionistic polish in the next episode, and if I can combine that with promotion, I will. If not, it'll be a four-part series, and that's just how series go sometimes. So next time we'll talk about perfectionistic polish, and in the future we will talk about how to get people to read or listen to or whatever this piece of content. So that's what we've got for today. Let me know if you want to swing by copyblogger.fm and let me know if you're working on something. That would be awesome. I would love to know what you're working on. And otherwise, I'm going to catch you next week. Take care, everybody. One little promotion, if I will, shameless self-promotion, as they say. I actually have a small course that I run that teaches people how to create this kind of content. We just get into these things in much more depth and with a lot more examples and a lot more individual instruction. If you point your browser to remarkable-communication.com/write, I'll have some information about how you can get on the wait list for that. That workshop is closed at the moment, but I try to open it up a couple of times a year. So if you would like to go further with it, it's an option, an opportunity. But my intention is with this series to give you lots of materials so you can go out there and create some epic content without spending a dime. So that's it for this week. I will talk to you next week. Take care.